Welcome to session 331. Mormon Sentiment 6, a progress report. I'm Eric Samuelson, and I'll be moderating. Our guests include John Charles Duffy, there at the end, who is currently finishing a PhD at University of North Carolina in Religious Studies. Dean Hale, who is former head of the Motion Picture Division at XL Entertainment Group and director of Vineyard Distribution. Kevin Fox, who is the founding vice chair of the New Media Council for the Producers Guild of America and executive producer of several films, including my personal favorite horror film, The Blair Witch Project. And Richard Dutcher, the filmmaker responsible for God's Army, Brigham City, and States of Grace. We were informed that there would be a representative from Hailstorm Entertainment. So far, I don't believe that person has shown up, unless some of you are that person, anyone? Apparently not. So perhaps they'll show up a little bit later, and we'll try and fit them in. We've talked to each of the panelists, and the question, is Mormon cinema dead, is an interesting one. Over the past year, in my view, probably the three finest films of the Mormon film movement were all released, which in my view would be Richard Dutcher's States of Grace and two documentaries, God's Army and This Divided State, all of which deal with Mormon culture in remarkable and fascinating ways. New York Doll and States of Grace. And yet, in some respects, this last year has been the finest year for Mormon cinema. In other respects, it's been a disappointing year in that those three films did poorly in the box office. So one very much open question that we've asked the panelists to perhaps examine is this a progress report or post-mortem for the Mormon film movement? We rather hope the former. But we also would like to focus a little bit on the future and what it holds for LDS filmmaking. We'll begin with John Charles Duffy. He'll be followed by Dean Hale, who'll be followed by Kevin Fox, and then Richard Dutcher, and then we will leave a little bit of time for the Q&A, and for the Q&A, the second microphone here is ready, so just like testimony meeting, if you'll just come up and sit in one of the chairs, we'll fit you in. Thank you. John Charles Duffy.
I have no professional connection to the world of LDS cinema, so my function here is to try to provide some larger context for thinking about the past and the future of LDS cinema. I want to think about the question, what is LDS cinema trying to accomplish? And I want to think about that comparatively by turning our attention actually away from LDS cinema to look at other kinds of religiously oriented cinemas, particularly what's called Christian cinema and Jewish cinema. So let's walk through this. Christian cinema. This term is used by a lot of evangelical Protestants and Catholics, many of whom perceive that Hollywood is either hostile to religion or immoral or indifferent, and they see themselves as trying to resist that trend. There are essentially two basic strategies that evangelical Protestants and Catholics have used in trying to develop some kind of Christian cinema. Those strategies are, one, to develop Christian cinema as an alternative to what comes out of Hollywood. And the second strategy is to try to find a way to get Christians into Hollywood so they can try to influence it from within. Evangelical Protestants have tended to prefer that first strategy, which is developing an alternative Christian cinema. This began several decades ago with movies that were being produced by evangelical Christians to be shown in the basements of churches. A particularly classic one was the 1972 apocalyptic thriller, A Thief in the Night, which evangelical Protestants of many generations have grown up on and have various kinds of reactions to. These films were often very heavy-handed and very didactic, but beginning in the 80s and 90s, their production values began to get a lot slicker. And finally, by the end of the 90s, what you see happening is some of these films, which tend to be heavy-handed, didactic, evangelistic, actually, however, getting into mainstream theaters. Probably the most prominent example of this would be the film Left Behind. Another prominent film is Omega Code. And for evangelical Protestants, this has been a very important development because it becomes a way of legitimizing their subculture. They are finally getting screen time at your mainstream cineplex. Obviously, I think there's an interesting parallel there to LDS cinema. Catholics have been doing the same thing. Probably the most prominent example of this is the film Therese, produced by a Catholic couple living in Beaverton, Oregon. Small budget film, was seen by the Pope, who apparently liked it, was seen at some mainstream theaters as well. The second strategy for promoting Christian cinema which is trying to influence or to increase Christian influence in Hollywood itself, has been promoted most prominently by a Roman Catholic named Barbara Nicolosi, who's the executive director of an organization called Act One, Inc. And this organization offers workshops which are designed to train Christians to become screenwriters and film executives. Act One's goal, and they're quite open about this, is to bear witness of the truth. They want Christians who will make films that bear witness of Christ and the truth. And their long-term goal is what they call cultural renewal. They want to take the culture back from secularism. Barbara Nicolosi tends to take a very dim view of films like Left Behind, the alternative Christian cinema, and is much more interested in films from within Hollywood that she sees as promoting Christian values. She loves Mel Gibson's Passion of the Christ, and she was also a big fan of the recent film of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Now, of those two approaches to Christian cinema I just described, developing an alternative cinema and trying to increase the Christian presence within Hollywood, LDS cinema most closely resembles the first. That is to say, LDS cinema thus far can be seen as an attempt to create a kind of alternative cinema. It will be shown in mainstream cineplexes, but it will be stories about Latter-day Saints and primarily for Latter-day Saint audiences. There is, however, a very interesting difference between that kind of Christian evangelical alternative cinema and the LDS alternative cinema. And I think this may be very important for thinking about where LDS cinema is going. That difference is this. Evangelical Christians and Catholics who are developing an alternative cinema are very upfront that their goal is to evangelize. Their goal is to fight secularism and immorality in film, and ultimately to reclaim the culture. LDS filmmakers do not talk in those terms. In fact, I find it very interesting that when I visit the websites of the two major LDS film distributors, Excel and Hailstorm, their websites use no religious language whatsoever in defining their missions. They don't even use sort of generic language about being spiritual or inspirational. I'm not quite sure what to make of that, but I would pose that as a question. Why is that? Because I don't think there's any question that many Latter-day Saints would share the concerns that conservative Catholics and evangelicals have about the kinds of films that Hollywood is producing. There's no question that they share those concerns about the direction our culture is moving in, and yet LDS filmmakers seem very invested in insisting that their films are not about evangelization. How many times have we heard LDS filmmakers say that their goal is not to proselytize? Even though I think you could make a case that LDS film engages in all kinds of missionary objectives which don't have to be seen in negative terms. Things like promoting gospel values, or creating positive public images of Mormons, or providing alternatives to the kinds of immoral movies coming out of Hollywood. But LDS filmmakers, in fact, do not describe what they're doing in those terms. I'm not quite sure why, but I pose it as a question. So that's the comparison with Christian cinema. Let's think for a moment about Jewish cinema. Trying to compare LDS cinema to Jewish cinema is kind of promising because, numerically speaking, the number of members that the LDS Church claims is pretty close to the number of Jews that are estimated to be in the world by the most common estimate, which is about 13 million. But when you think about it in those terms, an immediate discrepancy emerges, which is that I've seen different estimates ranging from between 60 to 100 Jewish film festivals held around the world. But compare that to my knowledge, the single LDS film festival, the one organized in Provo by Christian Buiza. I'm kind of intrigued by that discrepancy. Why is it that we have religious communities which are about the same size, one of whom has anywhere from 60 to 100 times more film festivals than the other? I could pose all kinds of possible answers to that question. It might just be that perhaps Jews are more adept at organizing these kinds of things, or they're more interested in organizing these kinds of things, or it may have to do with the fact that, let's face it, Jews have been around longer, they have played a much more prominent role in world history, and therefore are more likely to show up in films, so there may just be more films to screen in these festivals. I don't know, but it's a question to think about. Another question to think about in comparing LDS cinema to Jewish cinema is the question of how you define your cinema. The largest of the Jewish film festivals is the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival, which has been held since 1981. And from the very beginning, they had some very solid financial support from the Judah L. Magnus Museum, from the American Film Institute in Washington, D.C., and from the UCLA Film Archives. And that financial support has been very key to their ability to do what they do. It's interesting also to look at their value statement. The San Francisco Jewish Film Festival is committed, there's a whole bunch of quotes here, to an ongoing exploration of what it means to be Jewish. They are going to showcase films that will draw a diverse and inclusive audience, including affiliated and unaffiliated Jews, Jews who may be alienated from traditional Jewish institutions, and non-Jews. The festival is also trying to present images of Jews that serve as a counterpoint to Hollywood images and negative media stereotypes. And they're not shy of controversy. They have, you know, screened all kinds of controversial films, particularly controversies around the Israeli occupation of Palestine. Now, if we compare that mission to the mission of the LDS Film Festival in Provo, what do we find? Well, the first thing I find is that I can't find the mission statement of the LDS Film Festival in Provo. I don't know if they don't have one or if it's just not on their website, but that immediately kind of makes me wonder, well, do they have a clear sense of what they're doing? But if we then start thinking about the different planks in the mission statement of the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival, and we ask, well, how well does that compare to what the LDS Film Festival does? Here's what we come up with. How well does the LDS Film Festival pursue an ongoing exploration of what it means to be Mormon? How well does it reach out to a diverse and inclusive audience, including active and inactive Mormons, Mormons who may be alienated from the church, and non-Mormons? I'm not so sure the LDS Film Festival does either of those things. I do think it presents images of Mormons that are designed to be an alternative to Hollywood stereotypes. In that sense, I think that there's similarity between the LDS Film Festival and the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival. But otherwise, it seems that there's some rather large differences there. And I find myself wondering, if an event like the LDS Film Festival were to have an avowedly open, diverse sense of what it was up to, might it be able to get the same kinds of financial backing that the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival has gotten? That is to say, backing from museums, backing from national film institutes, backing from universities. I don't know, but it's a question I put out there. But then again, I have to wonder, if there were an LDS Film Festival that defined LDS cinema as broadly as the San Francisco Jewish Film Festival defines Jewish cinema, could it succeed in Provo, Utah? Could it succeed anywhere? And that brings me to my final question, which is, what do Latter-day Saints want LDS cinema to do? As I was preparing these remarks, I was very intrigued to discover that the films Saints and Soldiers and Napoleon Dynamite are often referred to as crossover LDS films. That intrigues me because Saints and Soldiers has a character who I understand is supposed to be Mormon, but is never actually identified as such. And Napoleon Dynamite has no obvious LDS references at all, though LDS viewers often seem to assume that the characters are Mormon. By contrast, however, I missed something there. By contrast, take the film Latter Days. It's a gay-themed film produced by a return missionary with an LDS protagonist. That doesn't get called LDS cinema. The website LDSfilm.com, in its definition of LDS cinema, specifically by name excludes Latter Days from its definition. Well, what does that tell us? I think what it tells us is that Latter-day Saints, an unspoken purpose of LDS cinema is that it's going to promote Mormon orthodoxy and Mormon morality. Latter-days does not do those things. Whereas Napoleon Dynamite and Saints and Soldiers, those are films that active church-going Latter-day Saints can point to with pride and say, our people did that. In the case of Napoleon Dynamite in particular, it's a film that Latter-day Saints can feel perfectly good about going to watch. There's no angst taking the sacrament afterwards. You know, it's a perfectly wholesome film. And yet MTV, arbiter of cool, put their stamp on it. To paraphrase Sally Field, they like us. They really like us. Obviously, Latter-day Saint audiences were not nearly so flattered by gay audiences' reactions to Latter Days. Again, the point here is to think about the unspoken purposes that LDS cinema seems to be designed to fill. And to ask, is that feasible? You know, if the whole point of LDS cinema is to promote Orthodox Mormonism and Orthodox Mormon values, that would seem to bring us right back to where I began. It would suggest that LDS cinema is very much like the kinds of efforts that conservative Catholics and conservative evangelical Protestants are engaging in trying to develop an alternative cinema. And I would propose that it would be very useful for the future of LDS cinema for LDS filmmakers to begin to talk very explicitly about that fact and its possible implications.
Well, I could listen to that conversation all day long. Thank you very much. That was very nice. Yeah, my name's Dean Hale, and you may know me for such hits as, well, I didn't make these films, but me and my marketing teams, we help distribute, in order, God's Army, Brigham City, Other Side of Heaven, Charlie, Pride and Prejudice, Saints and Soldiers, Two Work of the Glory films, and we did Jell-O Belt publicity and promotions for New York Doll. So my perspective all comes from that angle of the business. First thing I want to say is that Richard Dutcher is without question the most qualified and talented filmmaker we have in the whole movement. And the number two guy, whoever he or she isn't anywhere close. He's a true craftsman. Just his producing skills, his directing skills, his writing skills, I think, are unsurpassed. And in all that he's done, in any definition of Mormon cinema that we have here, and nobody else comes close. So it's been an honor to work with him and view his films. I wrote this all down because I'm trying to cram a whole bunch of information into as short amount of time as possible. A progress report of Mormon cinema. Mormon pop culture has been at this crossroads before. We've seen it with theater, with Saturday's Warrior, and we've seen it with LDS pop music. In all three movements, theater, music, and film, things started off with a bang. Lines around the block, sellout crowds, enthusiastic word of mouth, radio stations, critical acclaim, aha moments from every corner, and the perception, if not the reality, of some folks making lots of money. Followed by an explosion of product and increasingly diminishing returns, and then bust, and it's dead. Each of these movements was launched by artisans who'd been struggling in the real world of entertainment. They had the chops, they had tried to make it big or had, and were now doing something great for their own people. And we responded by opening our wallets and rearranging our schedules and telling everyone we knew. The originating projects were followed up by other pretty decent projects, usually by folks just as talented, but in all cases, the movements attracted less professional, less trained artists who saw the LDS audience as their ticket to success, and the market was flooded by copycat product or substandard product. Many thought they had the next big thing, declaring, this time it'll be different. Maybe it was different, but the results weren't. Now there's nothing wrong with anyone trying to make a buck and using art to do it. But there's nothing that says the audience has to put up with it. Audiences are smart. They're also busy. In our culture, we try to perfect ourselves and become more like Jesus. All our teachings direct us to that lofty goal, and many of us are making pretty good progress. So much so that at any given point in time, whether in 1978, 1990, or 2006, there's a sizable portion of these art forms' target audiences that are actually fulfilling their home teaching and scouting assignments, and frankly, they don't have the time or care. On the audience's collective list of priorities, supporting the LDS hearts is not very high because it's not for them. They already go to church. They're saying to themselves, may the vast unrepentant or inactive masses buy such tickets or DVDs and be saved thereby. I'm already taken care of. So when something like Saturday's Warrior or Greater Than Us All or God's Army hits with a splash, it's attracting folks away from their list of priorities. They frankly, briefly reprioritize and show up in the album or the show as a hit. These cultural movements cannot be analyzed without taking into account These cultural movements cannot be analyzed without taking into account how the audiences behave and how the artisans behave. Being a democratic society, anyone can create art, but no one has to buy it. Much has been said in the press over the past year about poor craftsmanship in LDS cinema. There's much there to discuss, but as a marketer, not a filmmaker, I get my feedback from the audiences, the folks that have the money in their wallets. I have a friend who owns an LDS bookstore in Southern California. He is well known, he's a respected businessman, and has done a lot over the years for these LDS cultural movements. His store is right next to a Beehive clothing store. Everyone knows it's there, or so he thought. One day, he noticed his recently released stake president shopping in his store. Upon seeing my friend, he quickly approached and exclaimed, I didn't know this store was here. Look at this stuff. This is great. My friend was astonished. Stake's president's wife had been there and shopped many times. His children had been there and shopped many times. His store had been there for years. He had sponsored concerts and book signings, many of them successfully. And here was someone at the heart and soul of the local LDS community who didn't even know his store existed. This and scores of other anecdotes illustrate the point I want to make this morning, that most Latter-day Saints hardly know about and most don't care about the LDS cinema movement. Most have not seen more than a couple LDS movies. Most have not heard of most LDS movies. They hear of the few that get lots of word of mouth. They say they may see some advertising or catch a story on TV, but most don't care or are too busy. It's because that which brings us together, the church, teaches us to have more important priorities. Now, does that mean they don't see movies? Lord, no. They go, but they go to be entertained, to take their kids, to clear their minds. They get 3 or more hours of religion a week for free. Why pay for more? In And someone would argue that they're already paying for it. Let me share some numbers with you. God's Army in Utah, we're only talking about Utah, over 26 weeks did $1.4 million in box office. The fact that it played that long meant there's some word of mouth going on. $1.4 million. Other Side of Heaven, only in Utah, over 23 weeks did $1.7 million in box office. The Work in the Glory films performed similarly. No other LDS films even come close to that level within Utah. Okay, now let's talk about Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. In Utah, $3.5 million in 3 weeks. Almost three times as much as, or over two times as much as the Other Side of Heaven. And it's tracking to pass $4 million. In this state, that's with really phenomenal support by very active, very busy Latter-day Saints. It took the first pirate movies 11 weeks to get to that amount. That one's good, that the second movie got to, and a lot of people say the second one's not very good. So we might as well rename this discussion Mormon Pirate Cinema. If we did, we'd be talking about something more robust, more lucrative, and apparently more important to Latter-day Saints. You heard about the movie Pirates of the Great Salt Lake? Whoever made that movie should be on this panel. I don't want to take up a lot more time, but let me quickly share with you what, in my experience, LDS audiences want under the assumption that if no one is buying, you don't have a movie. Or, I'm sorry, you don't have a movement. And you don't have the next movie. In order of importance, number one, Latter-day Saints want art that resonates with their own personal spiritual experiences. This is the difference, I believe, between the successes of Richard's two God's Army movies. The first got everyone talking about their own mission experiences, and everyone could relate. The second, though poignant and symbolic on a thousand levels, was not representative of most people's experiences, and so didn't generate the buzz. The difference between the two Work in the Glory movies, their levels of success, is that the first gave new dimension and expression for Joseph Smith, the first vision, and the coming forth of the Book of Mormon, three major pillars in the testimonies of every Latter-day Saint. The second covered arcane historical events that are not central to LDS experience. That is why the Book of Mormon movie did as well as it did before word of mouth killed it. The Book of Mormon obviously is a very important topic for Latter-day Saints. Mobsters, Baptists, singles wards, suicide, basketball, World War II, cancer, and even Jane Austen matter a lot to lots of Mormons. But they don't matter to the large general body of Mormons. They aren't the topics that bring us together as Mormons. The LDS blockbusters will always, only ever be those art forms that positively portray the factors that separate Latter-day Saints from non-Latter-day Saints. Now, I know you're saying, well, we don't need every film to be a blockbuster, but we need a certain level of success in order to justify any level of a budget, which is, if you actually paired your budget to the level of success you want to get, if you want to do, like, the next Mormon barbershop quartet movie, you better only spend $100 on it. Anyway, let's see. The LDS blockbusters will always, I read that. This was true with theater, definitely true with music, and now we see it with film. Joseph Smith, Book of Mormon, The First Vision, The Martyrdom, The Plan of Salvation, Jesus Christ, Missionary Experiences. There isn't much else. Kudos to anybody that can add to that list. In the end, Latter-day Saints don't, well, number two, in the end, Latter-day Saints don't want to pay for religion any more than anyone else. They want to be entertained. The standard is entertainment, not known actors, not larger budgets, not greater realism. Number three, busy converted Latter-day Saints would love a film they can take their non-member or inactive friends to, something that is entertaining and can generate discussion about the church or otherwise help them in their church callings. If not, count them out. We've seen this over and over in a lot of the films we've done. Number four, lastly, Latter-day Saints love it when the world loves them and when the world is taking notice. They suddenly feel inclined to pay attention, too. This happened with The Other Side of Heaven. Can't tell you how many times I heard people say, there's a Hollywood company making a movie about one of our living general authorities. Well, it really wasn't, but that was a great spin. It's also what I had with Napoleon Dynamite. Like the pirate movies, Napoleon Dynamite overperformed in Utah because they really love us. Now, or at least we thought so or think so. Now I know, though, what you're thinking. What about the voices in the wilderness? What about the visionary renegades? What about something we at the Stone Symposium actually want to see? What about our ugly, untold secrets? Well, you better not spend more than $100 on your production. Please refer to the graph I passed out earlier. The further to the right, the more value a filmmaker's film is to Mormons as Mormons. The higher up, the greater ability there is to entertain. If it doesn't entertain and it is of no value to Mormons, that is, they refuse to buy tickets, then you're in the wrong business and you need to go back to your day job. If you know what you're doing and can make entertaining movies, but Mormons are indifferent, stop making films for them, make them for someone else. Go back to Hollywood. The church is already producing lots of material that saints use in their callings or with their families. Its main purpose is to teach, not to entertain. If you want to supplant the church, stop it. They've got that base covered because it's really expensive or free. X marks the spot where Mormon cinema is viable. Like a hippie Republican, you want to be high and to the right. And like any hippie Republican, really successful Mormon cinema is going to be really rare. The further away filmmakers trend from the core beliefs and experiences that define Mormons as Mormons, the weaker the movement. If we can no longer cover the topics that matter to Mormons because it's already been done, or for whatever reason, the movement is dead. But I have hope. There's more to come. It's not on the horizon yet. Somewhere, someone is hungry, so driven that they'll produce the next great Mormon film. It'll break the mold. It'll redefine everything we know, everything we think we know, and reignite 100 panels just like this one. But let there be no doubt, it will most certainly and entertainingly and positively connect with the core spiritual beliefs or experiences of the vast majority of Latter-day Saints. Thank you.
Well, that's a good place to pick up, because who I think is hungry is the audience. I think the Mormon, and Mormon Cinema at 6, that was the name of this panel. I started to think about that, and I thought, Mormon Cinema at 6. I've been involved in film for coming on over 22, 23 years now. So 6 is young. It's an infant. And this little kid, Mormon Cinema, he's growing up at a time when the idea of Hollywood, the idea of movies, independent film, distribution, internet, I mean, it went crazy. Suddenly we've got a whole new market system out there. We've got a whole new business model out there, and that's when this kid's growing up. Let's give Mormon Cinema a chance. I mean, Richard Dutcher. We've got one filmmaker that we talk about. He's our Woody Allen, you know. We need a few more people to kind of get going here. It's hard for me to be up here because I don't know if anybody knows, or some of you do, Blair Witch Project was not a Mormon film, obviously. I'm a recent convert to the church. It's kind of hard to stand up here and say I'm even, you know, in this panel. But I am a convert to the church, and I now plan on making Mormon movies. What are Mormon movies? Recently, I used to make a lot. I've made a lot of movies. I've worked on a lot of movies. Recently, I've had to add a new member to my audience. I used to think about making a film. I knew who my audience was. Now God's a member of my audience. That's very important. Suddenly it's changed what I want to make and how I want to make it. Does that mean I want to make Mormon cinema and tell the story of, do I want to make the Book of Mormon? No, I can't tell you since I've converted how many people I've met come up to me and they go, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a Mormon filmmaker, and I want to make the Book of Mormon. I go, let me just add you to the list here, and we'll find you financing after these other guys find financing. You know, the Book of Mormon was made into a film. I have not seen it. Has anybody seen that film? Thank you. It's a joke, yeah. That's because we don't want to see that. I think you hit it on the head. You know, we're in church 3 hours, and why do we want to then go spend another $9 plus popcorn plus a babysitter? At my house, it's $50 to go to the movies now by the time I'm out the door to go see what I've just been thinking about all week. So what is Mormon cinema? Is there an ability to tell a story that involves our faith, our belief? I've seen a lot of Jewish cinema. It's not about Judaism. It's not about, you know, I've seen a lot of this new evangelical cinema that we're talking about. It's not about their religion. You know, they're embracing horror films. Let's have a Mormon horror genre. Come on, you guys, let's make some horror films. And I know that this panel is sort of dealing with a different topic, which is Mormon cinema. But I think that's what we have to sort of redefine as an audience. That the fact that we are going to see Pirates of the Caribbean in mass tells us something. We want to be entertained. I also think we're so hungry for film that we are watching, and maybe not a lot, but we are watching, and please, I'm glad there's not a Hailstorm rep here, but we are watching their films, right? I mean, Singles Ward I've seen. I haven't seen in other films. But that tells me something. As a recent convert, that was handed to me in priesthood. You got to see this film. And I watched it, and I thought, no, I did not have to see that film. So what is it we're making, and who are we as a people? So like I said, the one thing I've been wrestling with, before I get to that, let me talk about two projects that I am working on. I'm working on a project, the Joseph Smith Project. It's a very different take on filmmaking. It's a very different take on Joseph Smith's life. Some of you might have seen it. We showed about 12 minutes of it the other day. It's been very difficult to finance, which is shocking to me because you'd think we'd all want to see a film about Joseph Smith. I know Richard's been trying to make one as well. It's a difficult thing to do, and I can't understand why that is. The one thing I keep thinking is maybe Joseph doesn't want a film made about him, and he wants to leave it at that. Like I said, it's a very unique take on the story, and it is not the type of project that Richard's looking at making. It's a very different project. It's almost like a documentary. It's a documentary style, I should say. And that's important to me to make because, again, I'm a recent convert, and I'd like that story to be told. I think his story as a human is very interesting, not as a Mormon and not as a proselyting tool for, it can be all those things, but that's not the point of making the film. And another film I'm working on, again, it's a documentary. It's called Exhuming Jefferson. And the concept is we're going to take Thomas Jefferson back to America today and show him our America. Are we living his legacy, and are we leaving the legacy that they gave us? And I consider that to be a Mormon film. I consider that to be values that we hold dearly within this church. And I have a few other projects, but I won't bore you with that either. But I just wanted to kind of give you a concept of my idea of what I think Mormon films are and what they're going to be. And we need a lot more of that. I get approached by filmmakers and young filmmakers all the time because I straddle this world of internet and sort of new distribution models and Blair Witch and independent film. So I'm excited that there's a lot of young filmmakers out there that you're talking about that are going to pop and break through with some really amazing film. I think Napoleon Dynamite should be on this list of Mormon cinema. I don't know why it isn't. I consider it to be a Mormon film. We all know it is, and everybody who I know who isn't Mormon knows it is. So let's identify it as that. Certainly, I know the press got a hold of it and talked about it as that, and I think it was really interesting because it was accepted. MTV put their stamp of approval on it. At the same time, it was allowed to be mentioned as, these guys are Mormon, and I think that's incredible. I don't want to go too long because I really think the Q&As of these sessions are really important. So let me just sort of wrap this up with the concept of let's make films, start making them. I agree with, Mr. Brother Hale here has an interesting point of view because he is from the marketing business side. So he is going to say, make it for $100. And raising money for these films is difficult. I'm not going to lie about that. But I've also been involved with many films that were made because they had to be made and they found a way to finance them. We're in a new world where distribution is changing. And here within the church, you've got a network. You've got 3 hours on a Sunday where you're all gathered together that a lot of people don't have. Marketing departments at Warner Brothers would kill for that group of people who are absolutely there together for 3 hours talking about what movies they saw that week or what they're going to see next week. Like I said, Singles Ward was handed to me in priesthood. Let's use this. We've got it. Let's now feed those hungry people out there with good quality entertainment that they're yearning for. Let's not think we have to make a film that tells the story of Mormonism and, let's change the concepts of what films are and what they're doing for Mormons and Mormon cinema. The one thing I do wrestle with, and I'll just say this before I wrap up, is I do have this sort of, with God as now my audience, along with it comes the institution of the church as my audience. And I do feel this weight of what is it I'm allowed to say, what is it I'm not allowed to say. Could I make Blair Witch 2? Well, they made Blair Witch 2. It was horrible. Could I make Blair Witch 3? No, I don't know if I could make Blair Witch 3. And for many reasons. Not that I wouldn't want to make it, but I might be, excommunicated. I might be. And there is that weight, and that's a difficult problem. And I don't know what to do about it. I think I congratulate Sunstone for being here because it makes me feel a little more comfortable with the ability to say what I want and to be who I am and to make some exciting stories and tell those stories. So just stay hungry as an audience. We're not responsible for keeping Mormon cinema alive. You guys are. You and all your friends. So let's keep it alive. Thanks.
Kevin, I'll make Blair Witch 3 if that's all right. Although I'm sure you already picked this up by his intelligent speech, Dean Hale really doesn't have anything to do with Hailstorm Entertainment. They're completely separate. So, did anybody from Hailstorm show up, by the way? Did you sneak in the back? Because I wrote my whole speech hoping you'd be here. So. Okay, how do I feel about Mormon cinema 6 years after God's Army? My emotional connection to Mormon cinema has been quite a roller coaster ride. In the past, I've compared Mormon cinema to a child that I tried to conceive and raise up in a certain way, but then the child became something very different than what I had hoped. And at other times, I've compared it to the Frankenstein monster. And today, I'm going to try to be a little more hopeful. Today I'm going to compare Mormon cinema to a woman. So, it's about 10 years ago now that I met this woman. Nobody was paying any attention to her. She was standing against the wall waiting for somebody to ask her for a dance. And she'd been waiting for a very, very long time. And when I started flirting with her, I realized instantly what potential she had. I saw that she could be strikingly beautiful, charming, absolutely devastating. And more, I could see that she could be intimidatingly intelligent, wise, witty, and perceptive. She had the potential to be the perfect woman with the soul of Gandhi and the looks of Michelle Pfeiffer. So I dressed her up, I took her out, and I showed her off, and I told anyone and everyone who would listen about her potential. I was madly and I was passionately in love with her. And then she started dating other men. Now I wanted her to have that freedom. I honestly did, but her choice of suitors was very disappointing. She started fornicating with morons and pimps. And I tried to explain to these men not only how beautiful and how intelligent she could be, but how fragile she was, but most of them wouldn't listen. Eventually, she picked up a few diseases. She became a public joke, and she's now in danger of once again fading into the shadows of obscurity. Now, in the ideal world, I think it'd be nice to clean her up, to give her time to repent, and to give her a fresh start. But unfortunately, I think there will always be in the Mormon community the opportunistic pimps and morons who will never let her be what she could have been. I guess that's the gist of it. Now, is this a postmortem or not? I don't think so. In fact, that's not the way that I'm going to approach it. But I do think that the patient is in cardiac arrest. The patient's dying, and we've got to figure out what to do. And I really appreciate all of the comments that have been given, very perceptive and wonderful points of views. And I'm grateful for the hope that still exists on this side of the table and out there that this will become something. However, as Dean pointed out, in comparing Mormon cinema to the other Mormon artistic movements, what happened? I mean, what happened to Mormon theater? It basically died. I mean, every once in a while somebody will write a wonderful play. Eric's one of these wonderful playwrights that we have, but who sees them? Who even knows about them? Every once in a while, somebody will make a beautiful album, you know, or compose something beautiful. But whoever hears it? You know, nobody. What happened to the great, you know, we had Avard Fairbanks, we had Mahan Rai Young, we have these little bright spots in the Mormon community in their respective fields. Minerva Teckert, we have Levi Peterson as a writer, but whoever hears about them? The sad facts are that in our, there is something about our community that whenever something of excellence rises, it's immediately buried under a mountain of manure. And the individual fields are held in such disrepute and held with such disrespect that not only is it hard to find the occasional jewel that's created, but those who are capable of creating those jewels shun the field. They don't want to be a part of it. You know, how do you, if you're standing in Second South, you know, preaching the book of Isaiah and you're surrounded by, who goes? Nobody goes to listen there. So I do have hope, but what I have hope for is in the new media. I have hope for what's crushingly obvious to me and to most who actually work in the LDS film industry are the economic realities that are going to smother the movement, because quite simply what we have right now is this last year, I agree with Dean completely. I think we had, what we saw was just wonderful, what I think is going to be the pinnacle of LDS cinema. We had, of course, I was very proud of States of Grace, but I was so proud of New York Doll. I just thought that was the most wonderful thing. And I was also proud of the second Work in the Glory movie, because I thought it was, you know, whatever issues I have with the historicity of it, I thought at least it was a wonderful example of excellent production values and excellent craftsmanship. And so what we saw was this, we were right there, poised to do it, but what most people don't realize is the economic steamroller that's coming along right behind us to squash us all flat. So what I have hope in, and the hard thing is how do we overcome that? How do we stay alive? How do we keep moving? How do we do CPR on this dying beautiful woman and keep her alive? I do have faith and I do have hope, but I have it in a rising generation of filmmakers who will be able to make some films for very low budgets, some very serious and important films for very low budgets. And I have the hope that these films, because of, you know, the new media, the iPods, being able to watch movies on our hips, you know, have something carried around with us on our on our computers and hooking our computers up to our TVs and being able to get the word out that way, I have hope that that it won't die. However, my final word is, I think it will. I think 6 years from now, Mormon cinema is going to be exactly where Mormon theater is. It's going to be exactly where Mormon music is, exactly where Mormon painting is, exactly where Mormon sculpture is, exactly where Mormon fiction is. And that's the way it's going to be. Thanks.
We have ample time for questions and answers. Again, just coming up to the mic if you have any questions, and we'll do the best we can. Can I detach this?
I think that's the way our whole culture's going, not just LDS people, I think society in general in this country especially. We glorify the crap. I mean, give us a cheap reality TV show and make it cheap to produce and have people fight and throw stuff at each other, and that'll do great. Stuff like American Dreams gets canceled, which the critics think is one of the best shows ever put on TV. It gets canceled after a couple of years, and NBC fought hard to keep it. There's just no audience for it. Same thing with LDS cinema. I talked to a guy at Gateway, one of the managers, and I said, Suits on the Loose, nice little comedy. It's not in the same league as States of Grace, but it's a nice little LDS comedy, has a little bit of drama in it. 7 o'clock show, of five people in there besides me. All five enjoyed themselves, laughed at the right time, had a good time, left, whatever. Didn't tell enough of their friends. He said that, you know, is basically going to be gone Thursday. Richard's movie's gone in 2 weeks. What surprised him, Fun with Dick and Jame held over 10 weeks. That's the Jim Carrey schlop. That wasn't even a, it was a cheap, crappy remake of a 1977 movie with George Segal and Jane Fonda, which was mediocre at best. So I agree with Richard, it's sad to say, but I think for future LDS filmmakers, we're going to have to dumb it down. We're going to have geared for the audience 15 to 22, make it a seminary or a high school comedy, and get some actor from One Tree Hill or Veronica Mars and portray the characters falling in love and do it like that. Keep it light, silly, and dumb down the audience. That's the main thing, because that will go to it. Like Richard and Kevin, if you especially have time.
Kevin?
I don't know if it's my naivete or stupidity, but you know, I just don't see it that way. Yeah, theaters close. Now cinemas are going to close. When was the last time a traveling troupe of actors came to your front door and put on a show for you? Raise your hands. Yeah, that closed too. We just move on. We do new things. So this new medium is going to deliver us our content. Have faith, you know? Yes, it's nostalgic and weepy and sad to not go to a movie theater anymore. And maybe that's what's going to happen. You know, I don't know. But I do know things progress, and it's just time to move on. And stories are told in different ways with the ways that we need them to be told to us. So I just wanted to throw that out. As the...
Let me just say real quickly, modern technologies have segmented the audiences to, you know, with DVDs and TiVo and all the different ways that you can get what you want, when you want it, and with who you want it with. And you suddenly have some particular interest that you've always wanted to see a movie made of or whatever the art form is, and you're looking for it because the technology boom has made it so you can actually imagine it now. And guess what? With Final Cut Pro and digital video, there's some guy in a closet somewhere who's going to spend $100 and make the movie that only you want to see, and you'll use the internet to find it. So audiences are actually going to be getting smaller, and the numbers and amounts of film content is going to explode. And somehow there's gonna be an interface between MySpace or YouTube or whatever that is where these audiences are gonna find themselves. How much of that you call Mormon or not, I don't know.
But also the danger there, I mean, the good news is, yeah, the product could be available to, you know, anyone, everywhere, but if we don't figure out how to make a revenue stream that comes back to the filmmaker, then he won't, you know, what good does it do to, you know, take $200 and make a film? I mean, it's great to get that out there, but if only $200 comes back to you, I mean, how many great films can you make for $200? You know, I mean, there has to be a financial resource, a well, so that there has to be a market so that an LDS film community can grow. Otherwise, there just won't be the films, or they'll just be the kind of stuff you see on YouTube with some guy diving into a urinal. You need full stories, you know, you need full, meaningful stories. Yeah, you can see it if you want, so...
First off, I'd like to thank all the panelists. You've been very thoughtful comments. My question is about the ratings in film. There wasn't much comment on it. I see that as being a roadblock to a lot of Mormons going to the cinema. Even with States of Grace, I talked to people who had problems with the content, who wanted it clean flicked or whatever, you know? And I see this with Virginia Sorensen and the novelist. She published a great book, A Little Lower Than the Angels, in the 40s, I think, and it was received everywhere in the United States but Utah. And we talked about how Napoleon Dynamite was accepted because Mormons were proud. I didn't see that, and there even had critiques by apostles who said this novel was not good because it didn't give the best light on, you know, I thought it was great. So I wonder if you have any comments on the ratings and this being a roadblock to a lot of Mormons coming to the theater. I'm interested to see what y'all have to say.
There's a huge double standard out there because Pirates is PG-13, right? So if you're not going to see States of Grace because it's PG-13, you're a fool, and you're fooling yourself. I run into people all the time that say, I'll never see an R-rated movie, but they'll never miss an episode of some TV-14 show on TV that, you know, Will and Grace. They never miss Will and Grace. They'll never watch an R-rated show. Whatever. So I don't know what that is. I think as soon as you put a Mormon tag on it, people suddenly think that I want to go into it as if it is like church. Therefore, it has to be G. I want to be able to take my kids. Little known secret, the temple is rated R. How do I know? Because you got to be 18 to go there. It's because some people aren't prepared for certain things, and that is something to do with the rating system. And so if I can't take my kids there, I mean, why? You know, it must be evil. Well, guess what? We're all have other places we can go where we can't take the kids, and why is the standard different?
I think that indicates a really broad problem in our culture and in our community. Frankly, I'm exhausted trying to educate people on, or trying to get them to accept cinema as an art form, because still, you know, in our community, there's just no, and I think it goes beyond just cinema as an art form. I think basically anything is an art form. It's hard to get that across and get them to appreciate that, because, again, I preach against this all the time. Would I make an R-rated movie? Absolutely. Next year, you'll see it. And it'll be a, you know, profoundly religious movie that I'm sure our Heavenly Father will be just perfectly fine with, but Sister Johnson in my ward will probably, you know, spit on my windshield. So I that's what I would like to see. I think it's the whole problem that we're talking about here, and again, I take it into all the different fields of all the artistic fields. There's a problem in the culture. There's like an education that needs to happen that'll probably take generations to get people to appreciate painting, sculpture, film, literature as an art form, and to be able to trust and love the Mormon expression in that art form. You know, we're so far from allowing a Mormon to express himself honestly in any of the art forms. So I think it goes way beyond the rating systems. And when I hear people talking about the rating systems, I feel like we're still in kindergarten, because I feel like we need to get way, way past that and start respecting the arts in general.
Just a real quick comment on that, because it's, again, this is new to me, this whole idea that you can't go see an R-rated movie. I'll say it, this is being recorded, right? I see R-rated movies. One thing I did before I made a lot of films and I worked in post-production. My job was to get it through the MPAA with a lot of the films I worked on. If you guys met the MPAA, you would not be trusting them with telling you what to see. These people have an agenda, and it is very obvious, and it is controlled by a lot of things you don't want to know about. What we need to do is trust ourselves, folks. And actually, I've been working on this for a little while, but we're going to hopefully maybe release this thing soon. But there's an idea out there that we can now maybe rate movies ourselves, the same way you saw, I don't know if anybody was here on the internet thing, but you can go onto a website, and maybe hopefully it'll get bigger than that, but the idea is the consensus rates a film and not a bunch of people controlling it for you. So that's all I want to say about that. Thanks.
Richard, just as a postscript to that, I think you ought to let Sister Johnson spit on your windshield, and whoever wants to make the film you want to make. It's your love, it's your art form, it's what you want to do. And don't be afraid of the repercussions. That's how I feel about it. I'm surprised that there hasn't been more discussion on things such as the Da Vinci Code and really meaningful, deep religious movies that are being made now that really are making a difference with people, and their people are starting to see these things. And my question is kind of a big bibliography of sorts to movie makers. I mean, I'm not even in the movie business, but I suggest you study the work of geniuses, people that have been in the business. Don't necessarily make their movie, but study their work and what they do. For documentaries, I would suggest Barbara Koppel, Ken Burns, Steve James, people such as that have made those kind of movies. Yeah.
Do we have a question here?
Yes. Samuel Fuller, people such as that, John Cassavetes. Yeah, I think of people like Orson Welles that had full control over the studio, okay, when he made Citizen Kane. Wrote it, directed it, had a starring role in it, and he wasn't control. He did the movie that he wanted to do. And so, you know, my suggestion is that go ahead, don't be afraid to go out there and expand. I'm thinking of one particular film that was one of my favorites, and it's a very challenging film. I suggest you pick it up. It's on DVD. It's called Elephant by Gus Van Sant, and it is patterned loosely after the Columbine. And you know, those are the kind of films that make an impact. And I'm just saying, as a patron, as a person that loves to see those different kind of movies, don't be afraid to make them, and don't be afraid to go out and broaden your experience.
Thank you. John Charles, could you suggest filmmakers who you think are particularly valuable as guides to our own efforts? And you're looking at, for example, the Jewish Film Festival?
Well, no. I'm actually not going to answer that question, because what I want to say is this. The moment we start talking in those terms, I'm intrigued by what's happening here. I'm hearing now filmmakers complain that LDS audiences aren't valuing the product they're producing. And I sympathize with those complaints. But notice what's happening here, right? If we're concerned about revenue streams, then you've got to give people what they want. Let's figure out what people want. If they want lowbrow entertainment and you want to succeed, they give them the lowbrow entertainment. If people want clean films that are not immoral and are not going to be rated RPG-13, then give them that. If you want revenue streams. Now, if you want to make art, fine, go make art, but don't complain because people don't go to your movies.
I kind of want to respectfully disagree with Richard about his concern about the future of Mormon cinema. There are three dynamics that I see setting up a perfect storm for a huge Mormon hit, and I just wanted to offer them to you and see if any of you think that might be possible. And these may seem a little bit off, out in left field, but I'll do something very dangerous and hold up Fox News as a role model in front of a Sunstone crowd. But, you know, the news media had a reputation of being very liberal and sort of monolithic for a long time. And a lot of people could have said, fair and balanced, you know, programming is dead, or anything that is right of center is dead. And that provided a perfect storm for Fox News to come along and provide a dramatic contrast to what people's perception was about news. And that vaulted them to the forefront in many ways in terms of ratings and profitability, et cetera. So, question, you know, I see the sort of the dumbing down or where we are now with Mormon cinema as being a perfect stage for something to then come on and blow out the perceptions and the stereotypes within the Mormon audience that could really catapult it huge. But the other two things are, you know, people don't empathize with art until they felt pain. And with the internet and the anti-Mormon stuff going on and the new Mormon history that's being discovered, more and more Mormons are entering into that place of pain and of confusion that I think provides a perfect stage as it continues to build for real Mormon art. And then the final thing is with Mitt Romney running for president and with the South Park guys preparing a Broadway musical on Mormonism, I kind of see 2 or 3 years out as a stage set perfectly ripe for earth-shatteringly honest Mormon film that breaks the stereotypes among active Latter-day Saints, but also is appealing to the rest of the world in a very profound way that's more human than it is Mormon, but it crosses both. So do any of you guys think I'm crazy in thinking about that possibility?
Especially given that Mitt Romney's opponent's going to be Harry Reid.
Because it should be answered, I'll answer it. Yes, I think you're crazy, but in a good way. So, let's, you know, 2 years from now, something may happen, and I hope that kid right there is going to make the film. So, yeah, absolutely.
My comment is actually just for what I hope to give is some hope to Richard Dutcher here. Because when you made your comment, yes, I think it's dead. As far as me, and I think thousands of others of young, enthusiastic, someday filmmakers are together saying, screw you, you know? And I hope that's what you wanted to get from that. You built an industry from nothing, right? I mean, it was amazing. And maybe it didn't work, and maybe it failed. But guess what? There's tons of more like you, and we have stuff that wasn't even around back 6 years ago. We have technology. There are new marketing structures coming out, new distribution models. And we are going to harness this, and we are going to rebuild whatever is not working now. We can see the problems, and we're going to fix them. I mean, it's going to happen. And I just want to tell you, there are amazing kids out there doing great, great things. And instead of keep trying to repeat what we've been doing, you know, let's band together, make something new, and, you know, not remake Mormon cinema, but make a new Mormon cinema, you know? If Edison kept, you know, gave up on the light bulb, we'd still be having, you know, candles in here. So, you know, like Kevin said, let's make some Mormon movies. All right, I mean, we can do this. That's all I have to say. Feel free to comment.
Right, I love to hear that. That's what when I would speak back in 2000 about this, that's the kind of response I was hoping to get. It's nice to know 6 years later that somebody's listening. And even though I want to make a point, I have a lot of fun with Hailstorm, but I don't think they're solely responsible. Obviously, they're not solely responsible for the problem that Mormon cinema's in right now. I think the problem also lies in all those people who, the fault also lies with those who could have done excellent work, who were capable of it, who had the opportunity to do it, and who for whatever reason didn't step up to the plate. So it's nice to feel, my feeling now is like, you know, sometimes I feel alone or there's only two or three of us on the battlefield and we're being, you know, a horde of the enemy are coming upon us, and it's nice to know that maybe there's some replacements coming. That's good to hear.
My question addresses some of the things that have been addressed in the last few questions, and I was excited, and it made me feel good. It made me feel something inside when John talked about a perfect storm and a culminating point, an opportunity to step forward in a system of externalities that is obviously, as has been addressed by throughout this panel, that is obviously not conducive to promoting really good quality, like a really good quality work at a high volume, and is obviously not as successful as a number of other communities at doing that. It makes me feel really excited and sort of a funny inside when I think about the possibility that even in a system that maybe not the most conducive, that there is a possibility for factors to convalesce in a way that provides an opportunity to sort of put that on its head. And but getting to my question, I think that if we're not prepared for those moments, I think that those moments probably come and go. Those moments of a perfect storm, as John said, come and go without the right artist stepping in and saying the right thing at the right time. And I think that a lot of time that's because there's no artist that's there that's prepared to. And I appreciate and applaud each of you for being either there to step in those moments or encouraging others to step in, to be ready for those moments. But unless young filmmakers have a craft, the tools in place to make those films when they need to be made, those times will come and go. So I'm wondering, my question is, are any of you involved in like the film schools? I know that Eric teaches at BYU, and I feel like the Mormon community has a great farm system and lousy big leagues, you know, and it doesn't make sense to me, you know. We've got, the BYU film program is awesome, and the University of Utah has a number of young Mormon filmmakers that are excited, and we've got Sundance and Park City and so much in place for a wonderful farm system. So I'm wondering if what each of you do in regards to student filmmakers, and if Richard, if you ever, I know you went to BYU, if you ever make it back to there to work with filmmakers there, or that's my question.
Yeah, I try to speak and talk whenever I can, whenever I'm asked, and it's possible to get, I don't get many invitations from BYU anymore. I think it's because I have a beard. But you know what, I'm going to go off for a second on you young guys, because I'm back there thinking, and you know what, let me tell you something, and you tell me, you know, I like to hear you say, screw you, and I want you to, but I want you to listen to me. The reality is you're not going to do it, all right? You're not going to do it, and let me tell you why you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it because you're going to get married, and you're going to marry some woman who's not going to let you, who's not going to let you take risks. That's one. I'm telling you what happened to my friends in film school. This is exactly what I'm telling you, and the people that I've grown up with, and who wanted to be filmmakers, and who could have been filmmakers, and who could have been talented, and who were active Latter-day Saints. Number one, you know, they married somebody who wouldn't support them in the risks and didn't believe in the dream as much as they did. So they gave up. Number two, it became very difficult. They couldn't raise money. They kept trying to raise money, and they couldn't do it, so they gave up. And over and over and over again, they gave up, or they pretended to be doing something else, and they did not do it. And what I'm saying, this is a challenge to you. This is a challenge to the rising generation. I just don't think you're going to do it. Because my generation, you know, I felt pretty doggone lonely trying to, you know, pull off something like God's Army and people telling me it was stupid, you know. I mean, the guys from Hailstorm, they were the one, they were laughing behind my back when they were trying to make some stupid family movie and laughing about some guy who's trying to make a movie about Mormon missionaries. And of course, as soon as it hit, everybody rushes in and tries to, you know, make a dollar off of it. What I'm trying to say is there's so many challenges, and I appreciate your spirit, and I hope it survives, and I'm challenging you to make me wrong, because I have to be wrong if Mormon cinema is going to survive. I absolutely have to be wrong. Somebody has to be determined to do it. Somebody has to go over that, or some bishop or some stake presence or some general authority is going to give you a hard time and you're going to give up. There are so many ways and in so many areas that you can give up. I'm just saying, if you're committed to it, then really commit to it. Don't come to Sunstone and talk about it, but just do it. And screw me.
Two things to say. Kevin, is it? You mentioned MPAA, and there's actually a documentary coming out next month. It's going to be nationwide. It talks about the MPAA. Like you said, the hypocrisy behind the ratings, the agendas they have, and it looks, I saw just the filmmakers that made it on IFC. That's how I found out about it. It seemed to be very revealing, and I would suggest that anybody interested in movies go see it. The second thing I wanted to say is, the one thing about Mormon culture that fascinates me most is the history behind it. And I was just wondering, you know, I don't think I've ever really seen a movie, like, for example, has anyone ever thought making a fictional movie based on a historic context, a la Saving Private Ryan, you know, Saving Brother Hiram or something like that, you know, with the backdrop of maybe the Missouri persecutions or the, you know, flight from Nauvoo. I mean, the Mormon Battalion. I mean, there's so many fascinating things about Mormon history that America as a whole doesn't even know about. And I'm just wondering why not more emphasis is placed on this. I mean, to me, that would, like, not just fascinate Mormons per se, but probably bring in a whole wider audience of non-Mormons that say, hey, I didn't know this really happened. Could this really happen in America? The fact that it did, I think, would really open a lot of eyes and maybe focus more attention on, you know, other Mormon films. That's all I gotta say.
Cool. Maybe on the church history thing, that's exactly what we try to do at the Work in the Glory films, and especially the second Work in the Glory films. And that is exactly how it was marketed. Everything from the titling to the press releases and the messaging that we were giving to the mainstream press was all about that. And at the end of the day, only Mormons showed up. So it makes for some gee whiz press, but it doesn't get anybody out of their house down the street and into the theater buying tickets. So,
well, what the ideas were put forth to more mainstream directors. I mean, has that ever been done? That, say, you know, Steven Spielberg did Saving Private Ryan, one of the big name directors, got a story like that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a chance that it would happen, but ask Richard.
You're looking here now, you're looking like high
production. I was standing next to Richard when a really nice young lady came up and asked him, in all honesty, when are you going to make a movie that talks about deaf people and their struggles? And he was like, I got enough movies of my own to make. Why don't you go make that movie? And Spielberg's got his list of movies that he's going to make, yeah. And it probably, for the rest of his life, he doesn't need to make a Mormon
film. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, does it have to be just Mormon filmmakers per se?
Yeah, no, you get enough money, you can hire anybody to make whatever movie you imagine. You can be the producer, you write the checks, you can make whatever you want.
Yeah,
it's just economic realities is another thing. I mean, I think I've spoken to every wealthy Mormon that is in the church, you know, talking about this kind of thing, doing, you know, high production value, really nice films. And it's hard to do that. I mean, especially now that as Dean pointed out, you know, the market is shrinking to such an extent that you have to make a movie for $100, you know. And if you're doing a historical drama, you can buy a boot for $100, you know.
And you can't make a movie about a boot. Even if it's Brigham Young's boot, it's not going to be a very interesting movie. So it is a challenge, and I know exactly what you're saying, and it'd be great if we can do that. So hopefully, I don't think Steven Spielberg should do it. I mean, it'd be great if he did, but, you know, it should be a Mormon filmmaker that would step up and tell the story, because nobody could tell it as well as a good Mormon filmmaker, I think.
Has happened historically. There's the Daryl Zanuck Brigham Young from the 50s, and it has happened. Next questioner, Glenn, yeah?
Let's take your very favorable metaphor, pimps and morons, okay? As applying to the Mormon film culture, I assume you mean people pushing an inferior culture, and then the morons are the people that are buying into it, right? And let's expand that. And let's not say explicitly that a church is run by pimps and populated by morons, but arguably the church has been pimped up and moroned down quite a bit through the suppression of civil discourse and so forth. Artists are getting less, not more, prestige in the community, right? I want to pick up the last thread, get outside Mormonism. I saw, for instance, The Chosen when I was much younger, and it made me want to be Jewish, okay? Your film, States of Grace, is the first one that made me proud to be Mormon, as opposed to just say, hey, cool, we produce something that my kids can watch and not become sexually active as a result, okay? Which is what the Hailstorm is really good at, okay? As a father of three daughters, you get paranoid, or at least realistic. So that said, what you've got with States of Grace, Richard, I think is something that hits very strongly at thoughtful themes that are frankly not reinforced in Mormon culture, but are still part and parcel of the sort of educated culture outside of Mormonism or in Sunstone. So my hope is that films such as States of Grace make it outside where you've got a larger audience. Inside Mormonism, you have the Sunstone problem. About half of my educated people have left the church over the past 15 years, right? Now your Sunstone group is shrinking, where you need dialogue readership, same thing, about half of what it used to be, okay? You wanna make a buck, and I think you figured out you can't do thoughtful Mormon films only for Mormons. Thoughtful Jewish films that talk to non-Jews do really well. You can do the same thing with Mormons.
I just wanna clarify that I didn't.
Yeah, well, I wasn't saying the church is run by pimps and morons. That was certainly not what I was saying. I was just saying the Mormon film community is filled with pimps and morons, but not completely, of course. As you've seen, I mean, there are. So I got to make sure my metaphor gets across here. So.
I feel like this has kind of turned into a little bit of a testimony meeting. So, but I want to preface my question. I'm also a young, hopeful filmmaker, but I realize the reality of filmmaking and how tough it is. I'm a writer, and I feel like I have stories to tell, but at the same time, I don't know how much money they would make. So I'm wondering, is there enough revenue in the video rental and sales and in the little bit of TV distribution that you get for Mormon film? Or are we dependent on the theater revenue as well?
Copy, Dean.
Okay, let me throw you out some numbers. This is gospel truth. There's 300 million, roughly, North Americans. So when a movie does 300 million, that's like a top 15 movie of all time. So you're getting $1 a person on average, okay? You got 5 million North American Mormons. So when you get close to $5 million, like Other Side of Heaven did, you're averaging about $1 a Mormon. You can't get any more money out of them, period. Okay, so Shrek got the 425. Okay, you're gonna wait 10 years for that happens. Well, I don't know, pirates can get pretty close here. But in the Mormon audience then, you can't hit them more often and more deeply than that. Does that make sense? So everything's gonna do less. Now, you can play a fun game. Go home, try this totally works. Pick your favorite chick flick, right? And it'll do, I don't know, 60 to 80 million in the theaters, which is what percent of 300 million? Well, guess how well Charlie did, okay? It's a perfect percentage. And same thing if you do like some teen comedy romp, like a Singles Ward, it's not quite teen, old, mature teen, then the 1.2 million they did in box office, did a third, they might do 100 million. Wow, you got the same penetration of that audience. So you can measure almost perfectly how much box office you can expect to get off of Mormons. Something that's really edgy in art house, like States of Grace, you know, That's a tougher sell. It takes on the bigger issues that aren't necessarily related to let's go have a fun entertainment experience. You're going to have a you know a lower percentage of that audience, and X percent of the 300 million versus X percent of the 5 million, it's the same numbers. It plays out. Now, do you have to do the theater versus going to DVD? If you go to theaters, it means big, something big in the heads of the audience. They may never get around to going to the theater, but when the DVD comes out, the DVD, for whatever reason, is worth many times more than if it went directly to DVD. I looked at some numbers in just a couple months ago on direct-to-video sales. There was like a Barbie movie and a Prince and Me number 2 kind of stuff that did a couple million units in and of themselves. They were at a theatrical release. But they did follow on other films that, you know, big known brands. Everything else that went direct-to-video was, I mean, this is not, no kidding. Like, when we did Brigham City, we went to L.A. for our distributor, okay? And they've done, I don't know what they've done now, but after a while, the number settled in around 60, 70,000 units. They were ecstatic, because this was a company that did direct-to-video stuff, and 60, 70, 100,000 units, they're done. Well, if that's all we're getting, we're done on the number of videos, because you don't have enough to cover your budget there. Now, if you go, when you talk about foreign and television like that, you may, if you're really lucky, squeeze out another $1 million. Saints and Soldiers has been in that ballpark. I don't think anybody else is in that ballpark for TV and foreign, just because they don't translate. Mormons' themes don't cross the Atlantic very well at all. But, you know, Shoot 'em Up, World War II stuff hits pretty hard in Europe. So anyway, I hope that helps.
Yeah, I mean, I'll add to that. There is some, I mean, the DVD money that we're talking about, but that's going to be gone in a few years. Maybe not even a few years, maybe less. And that's why it's important that the Mormon community, if they want to be active in film and in entertainment, needs to get into the new technologies in a major way. I mean, I've always preached this. I thought if Mormons were as motivated as the pornography industry, we'd be doing just fine, you know, because they adopt new tech, they drive new technologies, you know, and we wait around 5 years until it's easier to do, and then we do it. And that, I really think that may be the secret of keeping some kind of a Mormon cinema alive is, you know, grabbing onto these new technologies and leading, being leaders in those fields rather than, you know, at the very back end.
A lot about filmmaking, but I'm just real passionate about this. I just recently returned to Utah after a lot of years being gone, and living with my mom, who's LDS, well, I am too, I just have to leave myself at the door in order to enter so I don't go anymore. But anyway, I took her to see States of Grace because she wanted to see it. And the last one I saw, I think, was Single Sword, and my mouth just dropped open. It didn't go far enough for me, but I just went, wow. I mean, I couldn't even believe it. And I would tell my friends that were active about it, and they wouldn't go. I'd tell the ones that weren't, and they didn't want anything to do with anything that had anything to do with Mormonism or something. And my mouth was just open the whole time, because I'd never seen an LDS film that was about the gospel and not about the LDS culture, or about a Christmas film that was about Christ, that wasn't about, but also that started to tap into the real issues. And like, so I guess, I mean, is there a way you can trick people? You know, like the Mormon culture, because there's a story that needs to be told about a lot of people in this room, about the pain that it is, what's really true about being LDS, not the portrait of how we would like to be, but what's really true about, you know, waking up and having your son tell you he's gay, and how you question it and the pain you go through. I don't know, can you sneak, you know, like Fiddler on the Roof can touch anybody from a conservative society that, you know, didn't know what to do with all the rules and people breaking them and different things like that. So I'm not sure what my question is, but I'm thinking, could you go from the back door? Not anybody who was Mormon would know that it's about Mormons, but where it gets everybody.
Yeah,
so
go ahead. That's yeah.
You know, it's like, well, X-Men's a perfect example. You know, it's a gay filmmaker with a gay philosophy being able to take a story and then infuse his own, you know, speaking metaphorically. I've heard of all kinds of crazy ideas about Mormons trying to do the same things, like using, you know, sneaking things in, yeah. And you know, like having dogs going across the prairies instead of yeah. People, you know, and having them talk to each other and crap like that. But, you know, but at that point, to me, and again, this is different, my Mormon cinema, this is a whole different panel, but, you know, my Mormon cinema is different than other people's idea of what Mormon cinema, and if it becomes that, where you have to hide it, if you have to submerge it, if you have to put it into little puppies, I'm not interested.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about, like States of Grace, except I'm talking about really getting into the passion of the issues, the pain, anything that any audience could relate to of questioning your beliefs.
No, but you're right. You fall into that middle ground where people, where it's like, yeah, you've got a few people who will appreciate it and other people will say, oh, it came out of the Mormon community, it can't be crap. And usually those are Mormons saying that.
Well, so
you fall into this middle ground where, yeah, you could do excellent work and how do you get it seen? And that's the challenge that we have in the new technologies.
Right. But I mean, I guess where, you know, any religious culture could identify or anybody who, but yet the Mormons, when they go, will know that it is about
right.
Mormonism.
And the whole challenge is getting people to see it.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I got people in St. Louis and Nashville. We did screenings where no Mormons were allowed. We just had, in fact, we did one screening that was just Black Baptists, and they responded to the film better than anybody else, and they were very evangelical about getting out and telling people, but still there was that huge hurdle that's been built over the past 170 years, where the big Mormon on the top of the wall, and people will not climb over it, you know, and go in. So it's a struggle. You're right, and it should work, and someday maybe it will, but we're working on it.
Thank you. I'll keep it short. Humor me, please, in regards to selling Mormon themes. I believe I heard Richard say yesterday that the thing he hated most about Big Love was that he didn't get a chance to write it or direct it. I know it's not a movie, it's a TV series, but what does Big Love tell you as far as being able to sell Mormon themes? There's a market there.
Yeah, what does Big Love say about... again, I think with Big Love, it's pretty obviously not made by Mormons. I think that may be part of it. That it's on HBO, and so in terms of being able to market it within the HBO audience, it's so obviously not made by Mormons to proselyte Mormonism that people who aren't LDS feel comfortable with it and are able to watch it. Would that?
I think the show would have been received very differently if people knew that Mormons were behind it. I mean, everybody knew that Mormons weren't behind it. And I think it's great. I love the show. I mean, I think it does great things for, you know, moving along awareness of Mormonism, or starting conversations, even though some of the information is confusing. But I think it, you know, just as far as raising awareness and interest. But if in 3 years all we have is a South Park musical and show and things, this is exactly where we were before. I mean, is it good to let other people, other communities define who we are? You know, we have to get active. We have to overcome the challenges. We have to be driving the expression of who we are. Instead of complaining about what other people, you know, how they depict us, we have to depict ourselves. And we have to stop doing it like these Mormon minstrel shows that we've been producing. You know, we can't dance around and, you know, and make fools of ourselves for the humor of people who aren't us. We need to step up to the plate and show what we're really capable of.
Just a real quick question on the size of the problem. Get a few figures on what it costs to produce and what the returns were on the good movies you made, Richard Dutcher, and The Other Side of Heaven and the other good movies. What, you know, what are the numbers like? Obviously there's a big problem. But
what was your budget for Brigham City, Richard? $800,000.
Which, and returned how much?
See, I don't even like getting into a discussion about that because it's so complicated, and to even understand the general perception in the public is, you know, so they go, oh, you know, you read about any movie in USA Today, you know, oh, they made it for $20 million and you know, it grossed $19 million, so everybody's saying, oh, great, you know, it almost made its money back. But if you realize how many hands are in the pot before that money gets back to the people who paid for the movie, you realize by the time it gets back to them, they've got $1 million, and they spent more than that on marketing. So it's very complicated. And another panel, I wouldn't mind breaking it down. I mean, Dean and I would be both, it'd be great to just sit down and show you exactly the economic realities of it. However, that would terrify every young filmmaker out there, and I wouldn't want to do that right now. So, and I prefer to talk. I mean, I still think we need to be talking. Again, this is the conversation. Why the hell does it always go to money? You know, I mean, because Mormon cinema, from the very beginning, as soon as we started talking about it, I said two things. I said, you know, finally we have a voice. We can start telling our own stories. We can dig deep into our doctrine and history. We can express ourselves, define ourselves. Finally, there's a market for that. All anybody, it seems that all anybody heard was, there's a market for that. And so everybody concentrates on the market, 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 and there's nowhere near enough attention spent on the filmmaking, the content, the stories, the, you know, the purpose of it all. And so as important as those things are in their economic realities, I always make use of a question like that just to remind us once again that, you know, the money's gone. You know, Singles, whatever $2 that Singles Ward made, it's been spent. Somebody spent it on a car or who knows what, and we're left with the artifact. The money is, you know, ultimately not all that meaningful, but now we have to walk around with this thing. You know, we have to carry it around on our backs. And I wish people would be thinking more in the long-term cultural impact of the work rather than just the short-term economic returns.
When I was 18 and I had first gotten into the business, Bob Fosse, I was working with him, and he told me, if you're in this for the money, get into another business. So I stuck it out, and stupidly so, but I probably should have went into banking or something. So that's what that's about.
We'll take one last question, and then we need to wrap up.
Again, about the marketing. Work in the Glory 2, I think, was the biggest marketing campaign I've ever seen for an LDS film. At the same time, a lot of people I know didn't even know anything about States of Grace when it was coming out. What are some of the things you guys have learned about the most effective way of marketing the LDS films?
You can have anything, including marketing, in this world for money. On American Zion, I was under the mandate to build a, you know, get a lot of box office, and you can't get a lot of box office without building a marketing machine of a certain size, and more, and the only movie that spent more marketing itself was Other Side of Heaven, because American Zion was second to that, but a distant second. Nothing conveys the idea and essence of a film better than television, or killer trailers in theaters, and everything else. And it's changing a little bit now because trailers are much more accessible on the internet, but you got to give somebody a couple of minutes of time with your movie visually, because you're talking about a visual medium. It's like dancing about architecture. You can talk about it all day long, but until they actually see it, then they don't know what you're talking about. And there really is no cheap way. God's Army basically sold itself on word of mouth. Virtually no television advertising at all. We did a little bit of television advertising on Brigham City as a desperation move when it didn't take off like God's Army, like we all thought it would, being from Richard Dutcher and all. But at the end of the day, the audience has decided, well, since we're going to behave like Mormon, like regular movies, then you're going to have to market to me like Mormon, market to me like regular movies. So it takes bigger budgets, no question. And I think some of the filmmakers and distributors are finding that, because the audience, you guys, the broader Mormon audience, are saying, convince me that I need to come, because I'm not believing the word of mouth anymore.
Many, many thanks to our panelists, and thank you all for coming, and time to break for lunch. So.